Hey Google, what's today's date?
It's Wednesday, April 24th, 2024.
Hey Google, what time is it?
It's 3:58 a.m.
Okay. So I feel like with this recording, I'm just going to have to be really brave. I'm just going to have to be brave. I feel like there's so much that I want to say, and I hope that I remember to say everything that I wanted to say, and I hope that I articulate and explain it clearly. I do want to start off by saying that I feel like some of the things that happened to me yesterday, someone is trying to play chess with my words and my authenticity. And I feel that way because it's like, okay, if she wants to document, then we'll give her something to document. And so I'll just have to like explain what happened. So I had to go to the doctors in Greensburg yesterday. And I also had to take the young lady that lives in my house. I had to take her to the detention center as well so that she had to do community service for what she had did, which I had already talked about in one of my previous recordings when I had to go to court because she had driven my car. So she's finished it. She completed it. But her visit to the detention center was near my doctor's office where I had to go. And so I took her first and then I went to the doctors. And I want to say that the young lady that's living in my house, I don't get foster care, child care. I don't get anything for her living here. Nothing. And even if I was to be like a foster parent, which I'm not, but yet I'm parenting because she's been in my house since she was 16. So she moved in when she was 16. She turned 17 living here. And I don't really want to be a foster parent. Like my kids are grown. My daughter's 18. My youngest is 18. My other daughter is 19 and my son is 21. So a lot of it is because I have this biotech in my body, and the way that I get hurt, I'm exhausted from all of it, from just dealing with what's happened to me and coping with what's happened to me. And then the other thing, when you become a foster parent, they are in everything. Like, you know, everything. I would even say your health is something that is scrutinized as a foster parent, whether it be medical, which is physical health, or mental health. Everything about you is scrutinized as a foster parent. And I feel like that's the slickness. I want to say it's slick, but then at the same time, I can't use the word slick because, you know, like the way this all happened was my daughter asked me, could she stay here for 2 days while her mom moved? And 2 days turns into like a year because her mom, wherever she moved at, they had kicked her out, and then she had to live with other people and it wasn't a safe. Well, the young lady that was living here said that she didn't feel comfortable staying there with her mother because it was really no place for her to stay. So it was kind of like, it turned into this like year long thing. And even at some point, my son had lost his job at Giant Eagle. So I'm telling like a completely different story right now, but my son lost his job at Giant Eagle. And so therefore we had less household money as far as like how I pay bills and how I take care of things. And I was splitting the money that I received from my daughter, trying to help the young lady out, because she said at one point she said that her mother wasn't able to give her any money for food or anything. So I felt I had my son lost his job at Giant Eagle when she was living here, whatever that date was. I was splitting the money that I was getting from my child with this child, because she said that she didn't have her mom wasn't giving her the money for food. So then I said, okay, like if you get food stamps, they should send it to you and not to your mother so that you can get food, because it's hurting me, it's crunching me. So I felt like I was being really crunched, but I also felt like it would have been wrong for me not to help her out. And I should have told this story with the last story that I told about CYS, DHS. This really should have been a story I told, because, but instead I talked about my own daughters. But I was saying how in my last recording, one of my last recordings, that they didn't do anything. Matter of fact, when I tried to apply for the food stamps for her, so that she could have more money for food, they took my household income. They is the Department of Welfare, took my household income from my, at the time, my 20-year-old son and my 19-year-old daughter and my 18-year-old daughter and myself, and disqualified the child that was living in my home because her mom lost her home for food stamps. And so I only get a certain amount of money every month, which is nothing. I get like pennies on the dollar, and I have biotech in my body that is was snuck in my body during a hysterectomy, boiling up my skin, my blood, and everything else, twisting my ligaments, burning my skin, causing me all kinds of pain and issues and concerns. And they took my kid's income to disqualify the child who was 16 for food stamps. And I asked them, like, Department of Welfare, I was like, you have to know that my 20-year-old son and my 18-year-old daughter, who at the time was 17, actually, my 17-year-old daughter and my, because they were like 17 at the same time. So at like a certain point, they were 17. And so at the time, my daughter was not even 18, she was 17. I said, you have to know that my 17-year-old daughter and my 20-year-old son and my 18-year-old daughter, because I had a 17, an 18, and a 20, are not supporting a 16-year-old kid. You have to know that, right? Like you know that these minors are not really supporting this kid. I'm using the money that I receive to support this kid, and it's not enough money. And I already have a minor in my house, my child, that this money is supposed to be for. This money is supposed to be for my kid, but I'm splitting it with this kid because she said that her mother doesn't have the resources to give to her at this time. And they were like, well, these are the rules. And I was like, yeah, but those rules should be only applied to typical normal circumstances. You can't apply those rules to an emergency situation where there's a kid in my house that's not mine's, and I'm telling you that it's because her mother lost her home and she doesn't have anywhere to go. You would have to have a special allowance or some special circumstance for a situation like that. Like, you know that she's a minor, and you know that she's in a house that's not her own, and y'all just don't care. And you just disqualify, and you're the Department of Welfare. Like, I had this, I did these recordings a while back that I kept private when this all happened, because even when I was in the Department of Welfare explaining this to them, the top of my head was getting burned, which is kind of like leading me into the situation that happened today or yesterday when I was at the doctor's office. So when all of this happened at the Department of Welfare, when I had to go to them, I felt like they had tricked me and bamboozled me all at the same time, because even during that time, they had canceled my health care, my kids' health care. And this was at a time where I had really hurt my finger. I had split my finger open because I was trying to cut the weeds down around my porch, and I had this lawnmower thing that has this, it has like a safety button. So meaning it doesn't work unless you push the button, and if you release the button, it stops working. Except this time, when I released the button, it continued to spin anyway. So I really felt like someone had messed with the safety triggering mechanism inside the thing, because I wasn't pushing on the button. I wasn't cut, and then it kept spinning, and it like split my finger. And believe it or not, I dealt with that on my own. I have pictures from when it happened. I had this hypothesis, like the body heals itself, and I knew what would happen. I was like, yeah, you need stitches, but it's your finger, it's underneath. Do you really care what it looks like? And I was just like, do you really want to go in and get these stitches, or do you want to deal with this on your own? And I kind of said, I know what's going to happen. It's as long as I keep it clean and let the air still get to it, and it doesn't get infected, it's going to, create this ugly, disgusting scab. But underneath the scab, it's going to heal. And then the scab will fall off and you'll be okay. And that's kind of what happened. It took weeks. Like I had to wrap it like every day. I had to clean it, sanitize it every day. It hurt and all of that. But they had, during that time, they had canceled my health care. I want to say that, to be honest with you, it mattered because I have biotech in my body, and for them to cancel my health care just seemed crazy to me. But if even if I had the health care, I don't think I probably wouldn't have went to get the stitches anyway. So that's just me being honest. But I feel like they might have canceled my health care so that I couldn't or wouldn't go get the stitches, because they know I have biotech in my body, and my hands, my fingers, they shock things. And amazingly, that same finger that got split open was still shocking things. Make it make sense. I don't know. Like it still was buzzing, still burning, still shocking things, all split open. So I think my nerves, like I said, I think all the cells in the nerves in my body are radioactive. I think I have like a force field of static energy permeating from the tips of my toenails to the fibers in my hair, because my finger was split wide open and it was still radioactive, which is kind of, it's, I don't want to use the word amazing because I was in a lot of pain and it was disgusting, but it was kind of like weird. You're looking at your skin split apart, you're looking at the ball of guts of your finger, and this joint is still radioactive. I don't understand. It was like I was baffled. I was like, shouldn't it be dead? Shouldn't it like not work? Shouldn't it not be shocking things? No, it was shocking. My finger was shocking things, burning things. Every fiber of my skin was radioactive and static. So, I'm getting off topic. So anywho, back to the young lady in my house. So I was really upset with the Department of Welfare, but I was calmly explaining to them that your program, you're the Department of Welfare, your system should be able to deviate under special circumstances, under emergency situations. You can't take another minor's income or another child's income and then say that they're supporting another minor. That doesn't make any sense. Those rules need to change. If you know that this person, this kid, it's not like an adult living off of another adult. This is a kid, right? So you're basically taking my kid's income and adding it all together to disqualify a kid who isn't their kid, isn't my kid, for food stamps, and you know that they live in my house. It really made no sense to me. And I felt like it was meant to deliberately jam me and make my life harder because, but for my daughter doesn't see it that way because my daughter, it's like, she cares about this young lady a lot. And she's like, she doesn't have anywhere else to go. You know, she was like, she's like us, you know, like my daughter feels like she's like us. You know, because I asked her, I said, why can't she go stay with her grandparents? And she was like, because her grandparents say that they're going to help and they don't help. And then she used us as an example. She was like, it's like us, like all the stuff that we've been through. Our family, they help, but they, you know, sometimes they can't help. Like, you know, so she was trying to get me to see that just because you have family doesn't mean that you're going to have the help and support that you need. Like my daughter was like, look at the stuff that we've been through. And the thing is, my family has helped me, but my family is not rich, and they didn't do this to me, and they have my stepdad has come up and done things several times, but he works for himself. He does upholstery. My mother has helped. My sisters have helped. My sisters have made sure each year they have helped me make sure that my kids had really nice Christmases. My cousin has helped, but they can't like support a whole nother household and all the things that need to be done in this house, you know, help, you know, people help how they can. But what my daughter is saying, that help doesn't really cover how you live. Like, I mean, she could maybe call them for maybe some chump change every here and there, but that doesn't have anything to do with the daily, like where you rest your head at night, if you have a home to go to. That kind of help. That's a different kind of help. And she said her mom don't hardly get no help. So, you know, so that I understood what my daughter was trying to tell me. But I also felt like the situation where we were in, we need help. We don't hardly have no money. Nothing. We don't hardly have anything. And I have biotech in my body and someone is hurting me all the time. So, you know, but that's that. You know, like people probably think, oh, she getting money for her. I'm not getting anything. I have not gotten anything for her. And also I feel like in a way it's because she's a minor. I feel like she doesn't really have anything to do with it. Like, meaning this, like when I think of human capital, like human capital, like finding a way to utilize a person. Like, I feel like if anything, her mother would have something to do with this, but her mother is in a hard spot herself. So I blame the government. I blame them because I feel like I said, it's always a gotcha moment. They always trying to criminalize people and arrest people, but they don't really want to help people. And I feel like they tried to humiliate me at the welfare office, even how I was getting burned at the top of my head while I was explaining to them that they should not be taking my kid's income to disqualify this child for food stamps who lives in my house. Like, I was getting burned while I was telling them that and I felt like they were like pimping me. I felt like I was being pimped and also being used. And they were trying to use a child to break me. So I felt like it was like the art of war. Like you're using a child through in a systematic way to try to break me. And then this child is like really a child and she don't have nowhere to go. So I felt like she was being used as well. I felt like her situation was just as vulnerable as our situation. And then she and her vulnerable situation was being used as a mechanism to try to financially break me. And so I felt like the art of war. It's kind of like when you send someone in to like when you send someone innocent in to take out someone else, right? You feel, how do you feel? That's how I felt. It felt like they were financially trying to break me. And then they were applying rules that should not have been applied to an emergency situation. And then it was also challenging me as like my character, like the type of person I was, like, you know, like, you gonna kick a kid out on the street? No, I'm not gonna kick a kid out on the street. But we about to be out on the street. Like, me and my kids is in a really tough situation here. Why aren't y'all trying to help her? Why aren't y'all trying to help us? Why aren't you trying to make this easier for us? Like, what? Why are you doing this to us? So it leads me to what happened to me when I went to the doctor's office. So one of the things that I feel like is that you, I don't know if I should say this now or later, but often when people have like ailments, when they're sick, they don't have to play sick. Like, a lot of times people with real ailments or issues, they actually try to do more than what they should and not less, because it's a defeating situation when you can't do for yourself. So like, people who have like arthritis and back problems, and or people who can't walk or have issues with mobility, they actually try to do more than what they should because they don't want to be in a situation where they can't do for themselves. That is like the worst thing. So one of the things I say about myself is, even though I have arthritis, you know, throughout my body, I'm glad that I can still do for myself. Like, I walk through the pain. I walk through the fire. I walk through, because I'm like, just think if I couldn't walk. That means that I would have to be like dependent upon my kids to do things for me. And they are like my kids. I would never want to have to wait on them for nothing. No offense. I love them and I love when they help me, but I would never want to have to wait on my kids for nothing. I would be waiting for a long time, I think. And that's just the truth. So it's like, even though I'm in pain and stuff, I still try to do whatever I can do, go where I'm grateful that I can still go and do what I can, despite the pain. The pain becomes irrelevant when you know that if you sit there for too much longer, you may not be able to get up. There have been days where I have felt like it has hurt me to get up, but I be so afraid that I won't be able to get up that I get my ass up. And it's literally, that's how it feels when you're dealing with real pain, chronic pain that could destabilize you, that could create a situation of immobility. No one wants to be immobile. You don't have to play sick when you are sick. You actually try not to be sick or not to be. Like, I get myself up. I dress myself every day. I do my hair and my makeup, even with me getting burned at the top of my head or my ligaments getting twisted, because I know how debilitating and destabilizing not just the physical condition could be, not even just the mental, but the outer appearance that can occur, like where you just don't move or you don't go. So I force myself to move and to go. But I feel like people take little digs where they shouldn't, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, you know, like, I feel like I did these recordings many times. Like I said, I probably should be posting my old recordings, but I had to go back and listen to them. But I always felt like people who had physical ailments that you could see did not have to explain anything they did, their shoes, their pocketbook. They didn't have to prove anything, you know, because you could see that they were handicapped. Like, you could see it. Maybe, you know, maybe they had a disfigured hip or leg, or they were paraplegic, or they had like a false arm, a false leg, a cut off hand, or, you know, like, you could see their ailment. So if they exerted themselves more or did more, no one would question them because they could see that they really had a handicap. But when you have like physical pain, right? And when you have pain that is internal and you can't see it, then a lot of times those people have to prove that they're not feeling well. Except I have an implant in my body. Chip, I have an implant in my body. So I feel like even for me, I shouldn't have to prove that my ligaments get twisted, my skin gets burned, because it was medically snuck in my body during the surgery. But yet and still, when I deal with, and I hate using color, but they happen to be white. When I deal with white people, and I might have to do this with black people too. I really don't like using color. I hate using color because I feel like it's not the person's color. It's their mentality and it's how they see you that matters. It's not really their color, but they happen to be white. And I, by the way, I like the doctor, Dr. Habib. I don't even think Dr. Habib is white. I don't think he's white. I like him, but they, you know, take little digs. Like the nurse was like, she had said something about my shoes. And I was like, yeah, well, they're not pointy heels. They're they are a platform, you know, they're a platform. And then one of the nurses was like, well, you haven't been here since September. And it was because I called the schedule and they scheduled me really far out. And I told her, I said, I'm back because I need my temporary handicap thing. It expired in March, but I tried to call earlier before it expired and they scheduled me way out. So, you know, so it was some little things like that where I felt like they're always trying to minimize and diminish the amount of pain that I'm in. Even when I go to the store, like sometimes, and like I'm a 46-year-old woman. Like I went to the store recently and I remember where I was at too. I was at the Mills, Pittsburgh Mills, and I was inside the wine store and at the Pittsburgh Mills. And I had put my pocketbook on the counter and the lady was like, "Woo, you got so much in that pocketbook." And this happened even before, like it's happened a couple of times. You got so, and I'm like, I was like, yeah, my pocketbook is an abyss. You know, the honest truth is there are things that I have to deal with that are very important. And there have been many times where I've left my stuff laying out, things that were very important that I had to deal with, and it went missing. So a lot of things that I have to deal with, I keep with me. You know, like there's things that I have pending right now, like my patent and stuff that I have pending. There's things that I had that I'm dealing with that I don't even want to leave around for somebody to be messing with and going through. So I keep it with me. And I have it in the cloud and I have it on a flash drive and I got it on the computer. I back up everything, but I still keep my certain things with me just because of all the stuff that's happened already. Like I just had to call the patent office because I got two letters. One of them was open. Somebody opened up my patent letter and I had to call one of the attorneys to verify that, you know, everything was still good and everything was still pending. And she said, yes, everything is good. Everything is pending. And I was just like, okay, because I got mail and one of my letters was open and it said X, Y, and Z. And I said, it was the same letter, but one letter had this in it and the other letter had that in it. And so she looked up the records and she confirmed with me that everything was good. But the bottom line is that's really nobody's business. Like, you know, but I feel like it's like a dig, like you're trying to like take a dig to try to like say, oh, you're not that hurt, or, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. You know, like, cause you're so concerned about what I'm wearing or what I have on and what I, you know, like, and I'm like, in my mind, you know, the psychology of feeling, I feel like I should not have to prove that I'm that sick or that I'm that hurt, because the doctor snuck biotech in my body. that twists my ligaments and burns my skin and does all these horrible things to me. Like, I'm like, even though you can't see my handicap on the outside, you can't see it. The doctors know that this biotech is in my body, you know? And then I'm like, well, and I always say, well, maybe they don't know, Nicola. Maybe they really think you're crazy. Maybe they really think you're crazy and they don't know that the biotech is in your body. And so, like, but I feel like you do know, because you're paying too much attention to what I do and you're making comments about it, which means that you somehow are overly concerned about my status. You know, it's when someone is overly concerned about your status, you kind of wonder why. Like, you don't know me, right? You don't know me. So why? It's kind of like someone concerned about how you spend your money, like just hating, just trying to hate. They don't want to see you. Hold on, my screen. Just hating. They don't want to see. It's like it's not their money, but they want to control how you benefit from it. Or they want to find a way to keep you from getting it. So it does seem, it seems like little digs to try to downplay and diminish or discredit my issues or concerns about pain. And the thing is, when you have real pain and you really are sick, most people who have real pain that are really sick or have it, they don't have to pretend. They're actually trying not to be sick. They're actually trying not to succumb to their pains. That's the truth, because I really be in pain and I don't succumb to it. I ignore it and I walk through it and I try to do as much as I can, and I get myself dressed and I walk up and down them stairs. And I see myself gaining weight too, you know, because I feel like even the immobility of not moving around, your ligaments get stiff, you start gaining weight. So none of it is good. Like, I'm trying to figure out how having stiff muscles, being immobile, not being able to do for yourself is good. Who wants to be in that situation? No one, even people in wheelchairs, wish that they could walk and do things themselves. And most of them will try, even if they're in pain, because no one wants to be like that. So why do you have to pretend and play sick when you really are? Like, I feel like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm coming here because I'm in pain. And the thing is, you scheduled me way out. Like, I told her that when I got in a four-year. I said, I tried to schedule earlier, but they put me, she put me way out. I tried to get in here before my plaque expired, but they were cool. Like, it was like most of them, like, I only seen, I think three of them. They were all cool. It was just the one lady, she tried to take like a little dig. And it was like, girl, woman, lady, if you could see the inside of my body, you would know that this woman has real pain. And she must just be ignoring it. I'm really just ignoring it. I don't want the pain to control me. I don't want the pain to overcome me. I don't want that. I don't want to not be able to move and go and do for myself. I pray to God that day never comes. I'll be waiting forever if I depend on my kids to do it for me. Literally forever. That would be frustrating too. I want to be independent. Not dependent. I don't want someone controlling my time. I don't want somebody controlling where I go, what I do. I don't want someone trying to control my access to things. I just don't. But I really do have pain, and it's real pain. And I feel like I got the pain that I deal with is on the level of a Navy SEAL and a Marine soldier. Oorah. This little black woman, I feel like I probably can take more pain than a fucking Navy SEAL and a Marine soldier. I might can't run as fast as they can run. I might not can't lift things like they can lift things. But when it comes to the endurance and tolerance of pain, I'm on their level with this biotech. I'm on their level. And still being able to focus and concentrate when someone is pin stabbing, burning, twisting your ligaments, doing all, I'm on the level of a fucking Navy SEAL. And this is no joke. I literally feel like I could tolerate it longer than they could. No joke. They probably listening to me laugh now, laughing hard. Like, you're right. No, if they had some kind of measuring of the tolerance of pain, I might beat some of them. Literally. That's what this biotech is. It's pain. It's pain. No joke. So, and you build stamina and endurance trying to deal with it. You start ignoring things that typically a normal person wouldn't ignore. You know, that's it's no joke. I'm not like, but anywho. So I was talking to Dr. Habib, who I like. He's never really made me feel like, I don't know. I think he knows the biotech is in my body. He doesn't push, I think. He says what he says and I say what I say. Because I feel like, you know, like I respect him as a doctor, but I feel like look where I'm at because of doctors. Look what doctors did to me. So at this point, I advocate for myself. And what I said, and so what I said was, you know, I've said to him, why is a CT scan not acceptable? I told him that MRIs are magnets. And I said, I'm magnetized. I have static energy running through me and my skin burns. I told him that my skin burns. I told him when I was sitting in a four-year, my head, the top of my head was burning. When I came back to sit in his, I told him this. When I came and sat in the medical room, the top of my head was getting burned. Like this, whatever, this biotech was put in through a hysterectomy, but I get burned at the top of my head. Make that make sense? I told him I'm not really comfortable with the MRI because if this thing activates while I'm in an MRI machine, it could burn my skin, my cells. It could burn my tissue, like my skin tissue. You would never know it underneath my skin because I'm already on fire. I'm already on fire. Literally, I'm on fire. Like I mean, like so. I just feel like like I said in previous because. Someone might, I was talking to my mom the other day, and I was telling her about the part that I wrote in my manuscript about a cure, a hypothesis I wrote in my manuscript about a possible cure for cancer. And I was explaining to her what I had put in my manuscript about a possible cure for cancer. And then it made me think about the podcast that I had did just that day before, where I said that they may need to exhume women's bodies to see some, I used to specifically cancer patients. I said they need to exhume women's bodies to see if maybe some of them had this biotech in their body and that their cause of death wasn't really from cancer, basically. So remember, because in my manuscript, I say that I have this thing, a possible cure for cancer. And then I wrote about it in great detail and I explained it to my mother. And I had wrote about it even before it went into my manuscript. I wrote about it years before, and I had tweeted out on Twitter that this, I felt like this doctor had either he stole my words, but then I said he didn't, maybe he didn't steal it because his conclusion was the same as mine's, but he used a completely different examples to come to his conclusion. But our conclusions were the same. And I felt like this, I had wrote about it in my Google Docs. I had wrote my hypothesis about it. But I had also said that I am a fine-tuned working machine, meaning I'm radioactive from the tips of my toenails to the fibers of my hair. Every cell in my body is static and radioactive. And it's 9 years later, and this biotech works to perfection. And so my thoughts were, before they made me, they had to start somewhere. And I know that they had to make mistakes. To make me, which is a perfect science, where I'm still active 9 years later, they had to start somewhere. They did not perfect this and what they've done to me just with me. It's they couldn't have. They had to start somewhere. And it made me question, you know, like what could have maybe happened to the ones, maybe people that subjects that they started with before me. Because they didn't get my permission to sneak this biotech in my body. they snuck it in my body. And I feel like they snuck it in my body because it was a fishing expedition and they knew no one would you know, consent to that. And they wanted to see how it functioned and they wanted to, you know, do research. But because I am perfect in functioning and it's 9 years later and the battery has not run out, I feel like I'm not the start. I'm like somewhere in the middle. I don't even think that I'm the end. I think there's definite improvements that they need to make with this biotech if it was to ever be used in an ethical, moral, empowering, privy, consensual, collaborative, communicative way. There's definite things that need to be upgraded and changed and modified. You know, I know what they all are because it's been in my body for 9 years. But I still feel like they had to start somewhere. But the thing is, I advocate for myself now. When I go to these doctors, I basically was explaining that, you know, I need guarantees. Like, are you going to guarantee that I won't come out of there a vegetable? That when y'all start running that MRI across my body, that it won't cause any adverse side effects where I might be worse off? Because, like, I could be wrong about some of this stuff, but, like, I remember before when I got my CT scans, I was in Penn Hills at the Wendy's. I did a recording about this. This was like years ago. I was in Penn Hills at the Wendy's, and actually I got my CT scan in Penn Hills. This white guy comes in with this guy in a wheelchair and he like gawking at me and then looking at his legs. He kept looking at the man's legs that weren't there. And then looking at me and kept doing it back and forth, looking like it was blatant. It was so blatant. It was like, if there's any metadata, I mean, this was years ago, but I mean, again, this is GPS. You can see every time that I was at Penn Hills at the Wendy's, if you could run cameras back that far, if you say, okay, she was in Penn Hills and she was at the Wendy's on this date and this date and this date, and you could get the camera footages from that date, you'll see it. You'll see him come in. I come in, he comes in behind me, the guy's in a wheelchair. He looks over at me, then looks at the guy's legs, then look back at me, and then looks at, he does it like 4 or 5 times. And then he's angry. He got this mean attitude and he keeps doing it. And I did a recording about it. And I'm like, he could just been trying to threaten me, intimidate me or whatever. I still got the CT scan anyway. It was like, I was still getting a CT scan, but the MRI is a whole nother type of machine. It's different. And then I'm wondering, I had this like horror story of what if they snuck this biotech in other people and they started to complain and they got an MRI. And then after that, they couldn't walk. Or after that, all of a sudden they started having organ failure and no one knew why. Like, I feel like maybe, is it possible that they could have snuck this biotech in the human body? Cause they snuck it in my body with the conclusions that certain tests would then basically get rid of the evidence. Like, you know, certain tests would cause other problems where it would like get rid of that. Like, it just makes me feel like, I don't know. I looked up the whole MRIs and what they are, and it's magnetized, and it to me, it emulates the biotech that's in my body and how I'm static. And I'm like, maybe I'll get the MRI and this will be over. It'll show that the biotech is in my body. Then I was like, maybe the MRI will deactivate the biotech in my body, and that also will get rid of the evidence. You know, like I'd be thinking like they had, like maybe they had an entry and an exit plan. Like, okay, she's going to complain. And then we want to give her the MRI, and because of the magnets, it'll deactivate it. And then we could say she was crazy and she made it up afterwards. Like, I just be, I'd be cool with it because I'd be like, I know that I have this biotech in my body, and I also know that the CT scans shows the biotech. I don't believe him because I asked him, I said, why can't you do the CT scan? That's not going to show the biotech in my body. he was like, no, I really need to do the MRI because, you know, I need to compare the tissue samples and all of that. And that might be true. I mean, that might be true. I'm not really, but I just feel like I'm having some issue with the whole MRI thing. I feel like that might be the exit plan. And then the discredit and the demand, because I definitely feel like the CT scan shows the biotech in my body. Like, this is just me just. And then I'm like, what if you get the MRI and it just proves that the biotech in your body? And see, this is the silly part. This is the part where I feel like it's just stupid. Why do I have to prove that biotech is in my body when the doctors snuck it in my body? Like, that's, it doesn't make logical sense to me. It makes it seem like that's the exit strategy. That's the part where, because it's like, you got to prove, like, even when I call attorneys and they say you have to prove that it's in your body. Dr. Fred Price took hours performing my surgery. I'm radioactive from the tips of my toenails to the fibers of my hair. I bet you there were several doctors watching him put this biotech in my body. I bet you my whole surgery is recorded. I bet you they've been studying his surgery on me forever. It just seems like bullshit. It seems like they're hoodwinking, gaslighting, and bamboozling me. It's already proven. I bet you there are why don't you ask? Why don't the police ask Dr. Fred Price? Did he sneak biotech in my body? Whoever is buzzing my ass out of bed every morning, even now I'm doing this live podcast and my middle fingers have gotten buzzed off its reels. Like, someone is buzzing my middle fingers off my reels and I'm still talking through it. So whoever is buzzing my middle fingers while I'm doing my podcast, you're fucking proving that the biotech is in my body. This is like, now it's my ring finger. Now you shock my ring finger. You're listening to me and you're like, oh, fuck. Okay, let me try another finger. Now it was my ring finger on my left hand, right? So you've been buzzing my fucking finger, middle fingers off this whole podcast. But the whole, now it's a light buzz on my right middle finger. But before, you was like buzzing and shocking it. But the whole thing is, and now my left leg is kind of getting twisted. But anywho, I feel everything. Like, from the smallest pin drop to the heaviest twist, pinch, burn, or buzz. I feel every sensation. I'm radioactive. Period. And not everything hurts me, but a lot of things hurt me and I ignore it. But anywho, so this is the part that I was saving for this. So I'm in the foyer of the doctor's office, right? I don't even know how I'm going to articulate this. I really don't. I'm gonna try. I'm going to be, this is the part where I feel like I have to be brave, because okay. So I have a website. Let me start with that. I have a website, and my website is NicolaWarren.com, NicolaWarren.com. And on my website, it's set up a certain way where I have my book, What's the Matter, the Psychology of Feeling in the Era of AI, a link to Amazon, where Kindle is exclusively on Amazon, where if you have a Kindle membership, you can read it for free, or you can pay for it and, you know, download it and read it. Then underneath that, I have my podcast, which is my humancapitalpodcast.com, which is, you can go there for extra special content where I read the first 100 pages of my manuscript out loud. I read it out loud. I'm editing it and reading it out loud and commenting and giving you a reference point of like what I was thinking, like why I wrote this. I'm like, it's quite revealing, you know, because it's not just like reading my words. It's reading my words with me making comments and giving you additional background information and details. And then underneath that, I have my smart stand up, which I have a patent on that you can buy. And then underneath that, I have my children's book that I published in 2011, because my kids are grown now, but that is also available on Amazon that you can buy. And then I have my Nicola reviews, because I also do book movie reviews that I blog. I'm a blogger. I've been blogging for like 2 decades, and I've kept that blog, because I read and I watch movies and I make recommendations and whatever. So, anywho, so I have all of that on my website. Okay. And then I have a FYI page where I kind of give some proof as to like the fact that I'm not the only one that is aware that something is happening in our country when it comes to women and women's bodies and the things that they're doing. I'm not an anomaly. Like this stuff is going on. It's just that they're not talking about it because it's like wrong. It's like, they're taking away people's, not just their property rights, but their body rights. And other people have access to other people's bodies, but I have a reputable, respected person on my FYI page that basically reports that on The View. She says it on The View that this is what's really going on in the United States of America. It's something they don't want to talk about a lot, but it is going on. And then I have my poems and stuff. So all of that. And then I have a science page where I have science experiments that I perform with static energy using my hands. So all of that is on my website. But so I'm sitting there, and what is his name? I don't even know his. I forget his name. Brian. Wait, what is his name? Oh my gosh. What is the guy's name? It's like right on the tip of my tongue. Brady, black guy. He has a show. And when I was sitting in Dr. Habib's office, there's like this big screen television right where I was sitting at. And on the show, there was this segment where the guy comes out with a teddy bear. He's coming from his crotch. Literally, it's not because you know how they have to wear costumes, but the teddy bear is coming out from his crotch. So it looks like he's sitting on top of the teddy bear's head, and then the teddy bear is like coming out of his crotch. And then he's one contestant, and then the other one person is a police officer. And they have to, pick which one picks whatever, multiple choice, and then whoever picks what gets to move on to the next level. So one of them pick the box. So they asked, did you want to keep the $1,000 or do you want to pick what's in the box? So the officer picked the box, the empty. And so what was in the box? It was like an arcade. So the police officer, she won an at-home arcade game while the man, the Mexican man that was standing next to her, looking like a teddy bear was coming out of his crotch, lost. So it was a little weird, I think, in my opinion, just the way the costume was on his body, it like with the teddy bear's head coming out where his dick was. It looked a little weird. And then how the police officer won an at-home arcade, with and it had like the remote control joystick. The whole thing was really weird. And I was watching it at the doctor's office, and then when that happened, my head to have my head started to get burned, and I was just like, so at first I just sat there, like at first, because the next scenes came, I sat there and I was like, is there any way for me to document this, regardless of how crazy it makes me seem or how random it makes me look? I said, is there any way that I can document this? So I just took my camera out and just kind of filmed the office to show like where the TV was and that the Brady guy was on there. And I just captured what came next because I was like, if you have what's in the episode, then at least you can pinpoint that episode, But it was the timing of it. It was like my appointment has been scheduled for weeks. And then I'm sitting in there, and then he comes out with the teddy bear coming out of his crotch. And then the police officer comes out, and then they win an at-home arcade game, and then the top of my head gets burned. So, you know, like, the thing is, tricks are for kids. It doesn't, like, it's not going to work. It's just, you know, I always do the 50-50. 50-50 is you're telling me that you know. 50-50, you're hoping that I'll be so fucked up and stupid and ignorant that I'll, like, snap or something. That I'll, like, lose it or do something awkward or strange or, you know, have some kind of temper tantrum or something. Or, you know, because, you know, even with the whole Trump thing, that somehow I might think that what's happening to me has something to do with him. I've always said, he wasn't president when this biotech was snuck in my body. I actually thought that the truth about me was going to come out with a Mueller report. I really did. I felt like there were things that I knew that people probably don't think that I know about, like, where I think the origins of this biotech is from. Like, I feel like I was the subject, but I'm not, the biotech is bigger than me. I was just the person that they used to test it. Meaning they could have used anybody. Like, I always say, I'm like Lucy. I was a nobody. I feel like the biotech wasn't centered around me. I'm centered around the biotech. The biotech was something that probably existed before they even knew who I was. I feel like they picked me to sneak the biotech in my body. And so everything else in my life, they used against me to try to get some type of justification, validation, cooperation, to somehow make it seem like that the biotech in my body has something to do with me. When I don't think the biotech in my body has anything to do with me. I think they used me for the biotech to test it. And they somehow tried to make it seem like I somehow deserved this or something. I feel like they could have did that to anyone. Anyone that they used to test this biotech on, they would have tried to destroy their lives so that they could somehow justify, get some type of validation, justification, and corroboration of what their reasons were, why they did this to me. I don't think this biotech has anything to do with me. I think they used me for the biotech. I can't say that any more than I can say it. And that they've just tried to use everything in my life to kind of like provide cover for what they did, when this is all about their fucking science project. Everything that's happened to me is about their fucking science project and their need to not be held accountable and cover up what's been done to me. And I truly believe that. And I believe that this could have happened to anybody else. And unfortunately, it's happened to me. So with that being said, I don't know if what has happened to me has something to do with him or not. That's not even the point. The point is that when I was sitting in the doctor's office at that particular time, it was meant to fuck with my head. It didn't really fuck with my head. It fucked with my head only with the fact that I know that that was the intent. So I always feel like that was the intent. And then I'm just kind of like, wow. You know what I mean? Wow. Like, and then I'm like, is it that you're telling me you know? Because at this point, it's 9 years later. It has not served me that you know. Like, I would have preferred to live better, to be able to, you know, someone remote controls my pussy and I can't take a hot bath. I can't wash my ass in hot water. I can't cook in my kitchen. You know, my bill, I have high debt and someone is like burning my skin and twisting my ligaments. Like, I feel like all these things are happening around me except a change in my quality of living better, you know, like, you know, not having to prove myself after I believe they know what they've done to me. It's like, I have to prove, you know, that I'm in pain. I have to prove everything. And it seems so evil and mean and hateful that that I would even have to prove after the fact that this biotech was snuck in my body. And I believe everyone knows it. And it's like, it's amazing to me. And so I was even hurt even more watching the news last night. And, you know, one, I was thinking about, like I always say, I always support women as far as like getting, you know, whatever their dues, whatever they're entitled to, or whatever is supposed to come to them. I support them in every way. So when I say what I say, it's not really against them. It's just saying, like, when I look at the timelines, it just seems like real injustice. So like when I was watching the news, you know, the FBI settled with the $137 million for the women with the Larry Nassar thing. And then I was looking at those dates and I was looking at how, once again, my surgery was in 2015 and it's now 2024 and someone is still trying to remote control my pussy, buzzing my middle fingers, burning me at the top of my head, twisting my ligaments and all of that. And I still haven't gotten justice. And then I was thinking, and then this woman came on and she was doing this documentary with Stormy Daniels, and you know, like, it's coming on television, and Stormy Daniels, you know, she was saying how Stormy Daniels is like a single mom and how she works so hard and how she's been working with her for 5 years to get this documentary together. You know, and talking about her selling her story about what's going on with her and Trump. And I was just thinking how, once again, my surgery was in 2015 and it's 2024. And even when I watched those things, even with the whole thing with Don Lemon and Elon and the deal that they had, you know, like Don Lemon was going to receive for his news stories with Elon Musk. I'm like very much aware like of all these people being able to sell their stories, and it made me think, oh, you know, that could have been you. But then I'm like, I always want to remind, like, because people are probably like, girl, you stupid. You just put your stuff out there for free. You should have waited. You should have, and I'm telling, and so let me just say this. I held a lot back for like I published my manuscript in 2024, right? But I wrote it in 2020. And then a lot of the things from my manuscript is from my PhD program from 2019, right? And then I was doing, I called them photojournalism videos. I was doing photojournalism videos and poems and things years before. So I have like all these videos where I explain a lot of the research that is in my manuscript that I did 5 and 6 years ago, to just say where I was and what I was thinking at that time. Even the whole like severance is like one of my screensavers, but I have a video that I did back in 2018, but I really did it in 2017 to let you know that severance is not really that unique based on my photojournalism videos that I did 6 years ago about this biotech. People are like, what the fuck is she talking about? I'm just telling you that there's a lot of things that I kept to myself that I was researching on my own and doing photojournalism videos and then doing audio recordings every day and not posting it publicly. And guess what was happening? And I'm not going to say that the girl Mei Ling stole severance. Severance is hers. Severance is brilliant. The thing about severance is she got it right on the notch. She hit the fucking bullseye with severance. She hit the bullseye. But I had photojournalism videos before severance was even severance, talking about some of these things in regards to the biotech and how it functions inside the human body and all of its capabilities 6 years ago. I believe that there's very smart people that know who I am. And it's like, she didn't copy from anyone. Y'all copy from her. She was already writing about these things and doing photojournalism videos about these things, about the biotech in her body and what it's capable of and how it functions 5 and 6 years ago, before I wrote my manuscript. Like, these are things that I created and designed and put together to try to like organize my thoughts about what I was thinking about this biotech. And then I put it in a book. Okay, so, but the point that I was trying to make about that, give me a second. Is that as I was holding all that information and doing my research, my words, my research was being released in creative art by other people. And so when I put my stuff out, it almost looks like an afterthought when it really was a beforethought. So that is the point. So I'm like, why don't wait anymore? I'm like, they're not really, you know, they had 9 years to buy your story. They had 9 years to tell your truth. They had 9 years to you know, after the Mueller report, they had not, what are they waiting for? You know, like, they're not trying to tell your story. They're trying to find ways to leak certain details to try to villainize you in a way that makes people think that somehow you deserve this, that somehow this has something to do with you and not the biotech and not wanting them wanting free research and using a subject to, they're not really trying to tell your story or get the truth out, because the truth is illegal. It's, the truth is unconstitutional. There's no justification for the truth. There's no justification for skipping due diligence and due process and sneaking biotech in my body and using it to torture me and having me and my kids live 300% below poverty. I mean, you've settled the Me Too movement. You settled the Larry Nassar thing. Now you settle in the Stormy Daniels thing. And here I am still with the biotech in my body with someone misusing it on me and doing all kinds of things to me. And then on top of it, the high bar, the middle bar things, you are taking my ideas from my audio recordings and then you're releasing it in artistic ways through other people as though they thought of it first. So it's like, why wait? You know, like that, like, I feel like you waited 9 years and you see everyone else getting paid from their pain, getting attention from their pain, getting empathy for their pain, getting restitution for their pain, and you have gotten nothing for your pain. And matter of fact, while you were sitting there writing, recording, and keeping things private and secret, they were just taking your words, your ideas, and releasing them to the world before you to try to make you look like an afterthought when you were really a beforethought. So this is like my logic now. Don't hold anything back. You're going on a decade, Nicola. Your surgery was in 2015 and this 2024, and they have not gotten around to justice yet. They're really maybe hoping that you die, or they're hoping that they keep putting you in situations where something bad can happen. They're hoping that something bad happens where they don't ever have to tell the truth or own up to the truth or pay restitution for what they've done to you. Why are you, well, don't hold anything back. You hold it back. And then a few months later, someone else is speaking your words and getting paid for it. It's harder for them to get paid for it if you speak your own words first. If they're not going to pay you, don't let them get paid for it, because they're not paying you. They're not sending you royalty checks for the words, the lines, the ideas and things that they use. And so it's not just ideas, it's words, actual words, phrases and lines that were used, that I wrote, things, concepts that I talked about that are being used in other arenas. So I was like, so even after watching what I watched last night and all the, and like I said, I'm not saying Stormy Daniels shouldn't have sympathy or empathy, or, you know, I'm not saying that she shouldn't get what she's entitled to. I'm not saying that about the girls that went through what they went through with Larry Nassar or the women that went through what they went through with the Me Too movement. But I'm just saying that when I hear how they talk about what they've suffered, I'm not trying to diminish their suffering. I'm just saying that I have suffered the same and greater on a much higher level, and nothing has ever been done. No, there's been no empathy, no sympathy. No, you haven't come to want to pay me for my story. You've been taking my story and owning it, and you've been getting paid for my story through all these artistic avenues, using my words and putting them in these films and these concepts, and making what I've experienced look like an afterthought when it was a beforethought. So that is like one of my reasons. So I saw, even after I watched it, I was like, okay, because I was watching Erin Barnett. That's when I was watching it. It was her segment. And I was listening to the lady who had been working with Stormy Daniels for 5 years to put together her documentary. And I was just listening to how empathetic she was, how she was saying how she was, you know, a hardworking single mother who had suffered so much from this whole ordeal with Trump, and, you know, how she doesn't have a lot of money, and, you know, and how this has been difficult for her. And every time she said anything, I was just thinking about the times where I didn't have water, and I had, my kids were small, but I had the biotech in my body. I was thinking about how we don't have heat now, but I have the biotech in my body, how my heater is broke and it cost $1,000 to fix it, but I have biotech in my body. Then I was thinking about my sister who texted me yesterday, and she was like, you know, she was saying how busy she was, that she had to fix something, that she didn't have any money. And the whole thing was, I didn't even call her and ask her for money. I didn't even call her at all or text her. I was confused as to why she sent me that text message, but I did call her on Saturday because I wanted her to go through my website, and I wanted to make sure, because she's like somewhere else. She's not here where I live at. She's in Philly, because I called one of my girlfriends and I asked her to look at my website because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't being censored, because I feel like I don't have any money. But I'm trying to sell my own story by telling my story through my book, my manuscript. And I had said that when I was on Amazon, it looked like my book was being read and sold in multiple countries between January 6th and then January 11th. And then it stopped. So I have like royalty checks, little tiny chump change royalty checks from like 6 or 7 different countries from when I released my book. But it looks like around January 11th, all of a sudden, my book just stopped being read. And then I was thinking how they won't tell the truth about the biotech in my body. Like, the doctors won't admit the truth about the biotech in my body. The police won't make the doctors who snuck this biotech in my body admit the truth. Someone uses the biotech on me every day. I document in real time my experiences about the biotech, telling my own story about what I've gone through. I don't have someone working with me for 5 years to put together a documentary that's going to be televised on television where you can make millions of dollars. I don't have that. I'm telling my own story about the biotech that's in my body, about my, how I've learned how to cope, not just physically, but emotionally, and how it's affected me socially and cognitively, and how it's affected me and within my environment, both the physical as far as internally, and also my environment, my physical environment around me, my social environment, you know, all of that, the psychology of feeling, not just physical, but emotional and cognitive and social. So it's like, I'm telling my own story. And then I feel like you got the nerve to try to block and censor it, you know? So like, meaning I wasn't calling my sister for money. I was calling her to say, read my book, because I get paid per click. So every page that's read in my book, I get paid for it. That can help me pay my bills. My podcast, every subscriber that subscribes to my podcast, I get paid for that. That can help me pay my bills. You know, like my children's book, if everyone that buys it, I get paid when someone buys my children's book, even though I haven't yet. I my book was being sold all over the place. I have screenshots of my book being sold all over Europe, and I haven't got any money for it. And my heater breaks, and I don't have enough money to pay my bills. So I'm like, you can't be censoring me and then not have enough money to fix my heater, me not have enough money to pay my taxes. You can't be blocking me from telling my truth about the biotech in my body and censoring my book and making it where people can't read it and censor and then withhold money from me all at the same time where I can't cover my expenses and then be using a biotech on me every day and then lying about it. That just can't be happening, right? It's like one or the other, you know, like if you want people to know your story, then write a book. I wrote a book. Now I wrote the book and you're trying to block me from selling my book. You know, like you're trying to block it where people can't read my book. You know, if you have a story, tell your story and start your podcast and charge for subscriptions. I started my podcast and I charge for subscriptions. But then sometimes when I'm at a different computer or something, I try to go to my website and it goes to someone else's website. So I just feel like the sabotage, theft, and defeat of this whole scenario, denying me truth, justice, and restitution for the biotech that's in my body, blocking me from profiting from my struggle and my survival, telling my story that maybe could help other people, or maybe, you never know, it might bring a bunch of other things out, can of worms out. But I just feel like, no, that can't be happening. So I just wanted my sister to go to my website and just, you know, I wanted to let her know, because my sister's a reader. We used to be in a book club together. So if I tell her to read my manuscript, she's going to read it. If I tell her to download my book and read it, you know, she will do that because my sister is a reader. All my sisters are. You know, I get paid per click. It's like, start with your circle of influence. Like, I wrote a book and it's like, you know, don't worry about strangers first. Talk to the people that know you. Tell them that you wrote a book. Have them click on it and read it. Ask them for their feedback. You know, I sent my book to my mother 3 years ago, but I think no one realized that I still kept writing. And I did a copyright on my book. But I also wanted, because I'm isolated up here, I wanted to know that that my book was out there, that people could read it. I was trying to understand why all of it, when I first released it, for the first 5-6 days, the bar scale was going up as far as who was reading it. And I was getting royalties from all the different countries. And then it just suddenly stopped. So I'm like, I know you're not stopping me from making money from my own truth and my own story, and then denying me truth about what's inside my body, and then causing an avalanche of circumstances where my heater is broke and I don't have enough money to pay my bills. I know that's not it. Honestly, I wouldn't even need any money from my sister if I wasn't being censored, right? I wouldn't even need money from my sister if Allegheny Health Network was forced to tell the truth about the biotech that they illegally snuck in my body, right? So I just feel like, and then even with the, I had left Spotify because they tricked me into taking off my patron support. Because they asked me if I wanted to add subscriber support. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll add subscriptions. That sounds good. But they said, oh, you got to take off the patron support to add the subscriber support. So I took the patron support off to add the subscriber support. And then they told me that I only had 3 listeners. And so I was like, okay, whatever. I'm going to re-add the patron support back, since I already had it on there when it was owned by Anchor and then sold to Spotify. But then they said, sorry, you can't add the patron support back onto your podcast because you only have 3 listeners. But it was already on there. So I felt, at that time, I hadn't been posting my podcast I had took a break in between when I was starting my program at Walden University. But I had still had tons of listeners for the podcast that I had already posted. But I knew once I published my book, I was going to like re-up and start doing my podcast again, because I was always recording. I just wasn't posting them publicly. I was recording every day. So I was like, okay, so now you're going to re-up, do your podcast. So I immediately started posting my podcast, and it said, like, I didn't understand how Spotify was like, you had 3 listeners, but then on the other end, it said that I had X amount of listeners. So now I couldn't have the, I couldn't have the listener support, and I couldn't have the subscriptions. So nothing. They said I didn't qualify because I had 3 listeners, which didn't make any sense, because I have screenshots showing that all these people were listening to my podcast. And then I asked them about that. I said, well, this, your analytics show that X amount of people were listening to my podcast from this date to that date. And, but when I click on to add the subscriber support, it says I only have 3 listeners. And so he gave me some, I have screenshots of the whole thing. He gave me some explanation as to why that was the case. Like, he was like, well, they're not really listening. He's like, they're not what I classify as listeners. Like, I feel like that's what he said to me in the chat, which didn't really make any sense to me. I was just like, okay, whatever. But I felt like that was the jam. So I was like, okay, well, then they can send me, like, now on my website, even my podcast, I have my Cash App where I said, send a dollar. I said, send a holler, give a dollar, or your heart's desire, something like that. I said, you know, like, give a holler, send a dollar, or your heart's desire. Because I was like, if everyone who read my manuscript send me just $1, I would probably be a millionaire and I could probably pay my bills. You know what I mean? But I feel like I'm being blocked on every angle. I'm being blocked where the truth is not being admitted about what's being put in my body. I'm being blocked from profiting from my story or my book or my podcast or anything. And I feel like truth, justice, and restitution is being withheld from me. And then I'm being humiliated by way of the circumstances. And then they keep sending me these offers for these jobs when someone is still trying to remote control my pussy at night during the day, buzz me out of bed in the morning, burn the top of my head, and buzz my middle fingers throughout the day. So, like, the biotech is still and twisting my ligaments. So regardless of all the things that the biotech can do, regardless of how powerful it is, regardless of the fact that it makes you privy, you still have bad actors who are misusing and abusing the biotech. They're not using it in a way where I feel like an example of a woman who's at work and she's being sexually harassed. So it's kind of like the work, it has nothing to do with the work. It has something to do with the things that come along with the work. Like, when you go to work, you don't want to be physically abused and sexually harassed. Yeah, that's what y'all are doing with the biotech. You have bad actors that are using the biotech to physically abuse me and then also sexually harass me. But then you want to be able to utilize me like a utility at work under extenuating circumstances. So it's like under duress. I feel like I'm being strong armed and under duress. Like, you know, like, you're strong arming me by withholding money and resources. And then I'm going to work out of desperation, but I'm under duress because of the way that the biotech is being used on me and has been used on me. So I have, like, physical and emotional trauma from the misuse and abuse of the biotech that is in my body. It seems like the people who did this to me want to have their cake and eat it too. And my classification of it is like, it's past communism. Like, you know, communism is when you don't own your property, right? But this is something much more than that, because, like, you don't own your body. You don't even own your truth. You're able to benefit from my labor while you're simultaneously misusing and abusing me with the biotech. I feel like I would be in what's called, like, my mom uses these words because she's my mom is president of a retiree union, but my mom has been part of the union all of her life. My mom is like a union person. But one of the things that union workers talk about when they advocate for employees is safe working environment. Like, no, like, making sure that employees do not work in what's called an unsafe working environment, making sure that their environment is safe. For me, it's my body. It's the things that happens to my body. It's the way that someone tries to manipulate the biotech on me with the biotech in my body. It's an unsafe working environment. From the moment I wake up getting buzzed out of my bed, getting burnt at the top of my head, getting digitally raped in my vaginal area and my rectum against my will, that's an unsafe working environment for me. I'm already in a defeated position. Even when I went to the doctor's office and I was just sitting there, and then that thing came on the television, and then I got burned at the top of my head, that was an unsafe environment for me, you know, because I could have had a bad reaction to the fact that someone was burning me at the top of my head. And then I went into the doctor's office, and still I was, while everyone's doing the wrong thing, secretly, incognito, I was doing the right thing. I ignored it. I literally tried to just, you know, see the doctor who I don't dislike. He's a nice, you know, like, I like Dr. Habib. Out of all the doctors I've ever met with, I like him. But he's not really that pushy. And I don't really necessarily believe him when he says that he can't figure out that this biotech is in my body when it comes to a CT scan. I think he can. I don't want to get the MRI because I feel like that I've already explained my issues with that earlier in the recording. But anywho, I feel like I can talk to him. Like, I don't have to, like, I tried just being regular with him. I tried just talking straight, and it seems to be okay. Like, I'm forcing myself to just be straight up. Like, I said pretty much the same things I say in this podcast, in short, real short, because you don't have that much time to talk when you're talking to the doctor. But I said what needed to be said. You know, I didn't, but it wasn't like, I don't know if it resonated, I think, because I just say it so fast. Like, you know, I said that, you know, my skin burns, that my body vibrates, that my ligaments get twisted, that I shock things when I touch them, that someone tries to remote control my vaginal area and my rectum. I said all of that. But I say it very fast, you know, because you don't have a whole lot of time. I'm not doing a podcast. I'm actually having a conversation with someone who is listening and then will respond. So you don't have a whole lot of time to be long-winded. But I said all of that, and he said what he had to say. And so it was just like, and we shook hands at the end of it. I got my little handicap plaque so I could park in the handicap spots, and I left. You know, it is what it is, but I'm telling the truth, and all these other women are getting justice. And I feel like it's because they weren't, I feel like even when I heard the lady talking to Erin Barnett, it didn't seem like, they seemed like they were on that woman's side. Like, she didn't have to prove, like they weren't going to comment about her shoes that she was wearing, or her pocketbook, that they were going to, like, they knew that whatever she said she had been through. Like, it just seemed more like more empathetic. Like, she was like, you know, she's a hardworking single mom, and she doesn't have a lot of money, and this whole thing with Trump has caused her so much grief and so much trauma and so much this. It just seemed like they were on her side, that she didn't have to, like, and the same thing with, like, the girls with the Larry Nassar thing, and the women with the Me Too movement. It seemed like they didn't have to prove themselves, like, that there were people helping them prove it, meaning they were taking the baggage and the anxiety and the frustration of the situation from them, and they were, like, carrying their burden and helping them. And I don't ever feel like that's ever been done for me. I feel like it's always been some kind of way to try to intimidate me or suppress my truth in a way where I don't get justice, because I feel like the people that may have something to do with how this even happened to me knows that they would probably go to jail, and they don't want my truth to be ever corroborated or whatever. It just feels that way. I don't feel like I've ever had that kind of support. I feel like it's always been them trying to diminish my pain and my suffering. And then they try to use me and what I do every day to try to say that I'm not in pain or I'm not suffering when I'm always in pain. I'm always, most of the times I'm always in pain. I just ignore it. And believe it or not, I'm in pain when I wear, I've never been a person that wears sneakers. Like, I mean, honestly, anyone that's ever known me, I've never been someone that wears sneakers. My favorite sneaker is like a New Balance. And even though I used to work at Foot Locker when I was in high school, I still never wore sneakers. And when I went to Jerry Falwell's school, anyone that's ever went to Liberty University, at Liberty, when I went there, you had to wear skirts in the buildings and shoes. So that's the kind of person I am. I've always been like, I don't wear skirts too much now, but I've always worn Nine West. Like, I'm thinking of like the 90s. I've always been like a Nine West shoe person that wears dresses, skirts, and you know, pants. Now I kind of wear tights, but you know, but the whole thing is I've never really been a sneaker person. And to be honest with you, when I wear sneakers, I feel like my back ankles hurt even more. I feel like the shoes I wear create more form. I feel like they create, they make me feel better. Honestly, I feel better. And yeah, that's just it. Like, I don't know, but that doesn't mean that I'm not in pain. And I don't wear pointy heels. Like, pointy heels is hurts people who don't even have arthritis all over their bodies. Like, pointy, I wear like block shoes. And I always, you know, always have, for the most part. I do have sneakers, but I've never been a sneaker person. Never. And I wear boots a lot. Like, I wear boots a lot. But the whole thing is me having to explain myself about what I wear after Allegheny Health Network snuck biotech in my body is just unbelievable. The fact that people even go out of their way to take digs at me about what I wear and what bag I carry after Allegheny Health Network snuck biotech in my body that burns my skin, twists my ligaments, is just unbelievable. And the fact that I'm like 46 years old and people do that, like, I would never do that to someone. Even if they didn't have biotech in their body. Like, it's just amazing to me the entitlement or the judgment that certain people feel like they could carry out to try to like minimize and diminish such an egregious, unlawful act is just beyond me. And the fact that they don't see how that's a problem. You're going out of your way to minimize and diminish my pain after biotech was snuck in my body. Are you fucking kidding me? I just be so, I don't know. I just be like, I do be shocked sometimes. I do. I be taken back. Like, wow. The world is changing. Like, it's really changing right in my face. And it's like, it's just, it is scary because it's so blatant. It's like, it's so blatantly dismissive and disrespectful. It makes you feel like Jim Crow. It makes you feel like they're taking you back to the 60s right in your face. But what makes me not lean so much towards what the white people are doing is that the black people do it too. The tokens, they do it too. Like, it's just scary. That's why I'm like, maybe it's not about white and black. Maybe this has something to do with class. Or maybe it's both. Maybe it's white and black and class. Like, I don't know. Like, I try not to get so caught up in the color thing, but it's just so dismissive and blatantly disrespectful. And then I'm like, this person that just asked you about your shoes isn't rich, Nicola. They are white. This person that just asked you about your pocketbook is working at a wine store. They're not rich, but they are white. But then I also feel like I don't really see black people trying, were they were never trying, like from 2015 to 2024, that I don't really ever see them trying to bring the truth out. And I, but then I look at how my mom acts, and I feel like that's where I might be like the naive one. I feel like I'm the naive one. Like maybe they're trying to hold things together before it completely falls apart, or maybe they had something to do with it. Like I'm not talking about my mom, but I'm just saying, I'm like either they're trying to hold things together so that it doesn't completely fall apart, or they're the ones that had something to do with it. I'm not really sure, but I just know when I heard that lady talking about Stormy Daniels, the support she had, the back, the empathy and sympathy that she had, and when I hear them talk about the women from the Me Too movement, the support and the empathy and the sympathy that they get, and to me, the things that they're going through are bad, but not as worse as what I've gone through. Like what I've gone through has been excruciating. Like no water. Like I just be like, just I be so baffled. And I be so baffled. I just be like, what is happening in this country? I just be so baffled. I do. I do. But anywho, I've been rambling on this thing. I've been talking for a long time about similar same things. And it's like it's five people on here too. It's five people on here. So anywho, I am going to end this podcast live.